I'm Senator Schaaf. We have with us so far Representative Vescovo, and I was hoping for several more legislators. I understand that Representative Jay Barnes is on his way. First of all, I'd like to thank you for coming. And we may have some people on the telephone. Is there anyone on the phone? Apparently not. They have a call-in number that they can call. We originally noticed this up as a hearing, but then we found out that in order for our committee, the Committee on General Laws of the Senate, to actually have a hearing, somebody's coming online.
This is Joe Kevney.
Hey, Joe. Welcome, and thank you for dialing in.
Sure.
In order to actually have a hearing, it took an action of the President Pro Tem of the Senate. We don't have a pro tem, so therefore he couldn't take an action. So therefore we are now having a public forum. It's going to look and smell like a committee hearing, except that since it is not technically a hearing, there won't be any minutes, required attendance, no vote, no roll call. We're not going to vote on anything. What we really want to do is to just simply gather information, and then we'll disseminate that back out to our colleagues in the House and in the Senate. We asked Commissioner Nelson from the Office of Administration to attend, and he's about ready to attend to testify to us. He only has an hour, so I want to thank you, Commissioner Nelson, for attending. We also asked the St. Louis Regional Convention and Sports Authority to attend and tell us exactly what they've been doing, and they declined. The reason that they stated was that I'm one of the plaintiffs in a lawsuit against them, as well as Representative Barnes. Are you also? And so they didn't want to attend. I feel that it's a missed opportunity for them to come and make their case. And but they did send some information, which has been handed out, and we'll talk about some of that later. So we have up to an hour. You have to be gone. You have to be at another meeting at an
hour. Yeah, I have a Missouri Consolidated Healthcare Board meeting at 1.
Right. And so I'd like to start off by asking some targeted questions just myself.
Sure.
And I appreciate that you sent us this documentation about bonding.
Right.
And I'd like to start off by mentioning that one of the things that I've looked at is a letter from Gilmore Bell. If you don't have this, would you make sure that he has all of these documents? And this is the general counsel of the Office of Administration, and this was an opinion trying to decide whether revenue bonds violated Article 3, Section 37.
Right.
And so in their analysis, they talk about there being two kinds of bonds, general obligation bonds and then revenue bonds.
Right.
In the information that you provided to us, you said there were general obligation bonds, special obligation revenue bonds, and then conduit bonds.
Correct.
And are conduit bonds just a subcategory of revenue bonds?
They are, yeah. They're issued by specific authorities that the General Assembly has created over time. Missouri Development Finance Board, MOHIFA, MOHILA, the RSA. But they are not backed by the full faith and credit of the state, and they are subject to appropriation.
Okay. In the Gilmore Bell analysis, which I thought was very interesting, on the very last page, on page 5, if you look there, there's a paragraph, and it says that the only obligation of the state was to seek future appropriations for payments of the bonds, for which we rendered an unqualified approved opinion regarding legality of the transaction.
Right.
So,
right.
So with regard to these revenue bonds, the Sports Authority issues them,
right.
And our total obligation is to seek the appropriation.
Yeah, for a second, let me back up and point to the document I provided you, because I think it's relevant in trying to answer your question. The state has general obligation bond authority presented by the Constitution. Those are deemed appropriated because it's backed by the full faith and credit of the state, and the bondholders could exercise against the taxing authority of the state if they're not paid. So the process there is, Constitution requires a vote of the people, General Assembly has to act, and at that point in time, the executive branch executes the bond issuance through the Board of Fund Commissioners, and we move forward. I mean, I think a couple third-class building bonds is a good example, stormwater bonds. Those are all in House Bill 1 appropriation debt. You then have what I refer to as special revenue bonds, and those are generally Board of Public Building bonds. And that authority is set out in Chapter 8. The General Assembly sets limits to the cap amount. So we've got to stay under that cap. If we want to go over it, we've got to come and get legislative action through the General Assembly to raise that cap. But the projects, and you'll remember from last year, have to be approved by the Joint Committee on Legislative Research before, and then the Board of Public Building acts. Those are subject to appropriation. So yes, we have to seek appropriation, and we submitted our obligation for that issuance. Now, on the face of those documents and on the disclosure statements, it's made very clear to the people buying those instruments that it is subject to appropriation. They cannot come back against the state, at least successfully not come back against the state, to seek full faith and credit or taxing authority. The conduit bonds that I refer to in my document to you are those special associations and creatures that the General Assembly has created over time to have the authority to issue bonds for particular areas. I mean, MOHIFA, health and education, RSA, in my opinion, the General Assembly very broad authority for the RSA to issue bonds over a number of different facilities that it identifies in that statute. And then again, those are not backed by the full faith and credit. Those are deemed to be, like you said earlier, somewhat consistent with revenue bonds, but they're not issued through the Board of Public Buildings. They're issued through these other authorities.
Now, the conduit bonds then that you've described, they are revenue bonds technically, right?
Yeah.
In that the payments on the bonds have to come from the revenue of the project.
Right, and that could be an appropriation made by the General Assembly. It could be a lease payment. Yeah,
so in the case of the Edward Jones Dome, my understanding is that there was a financing agreement in which the state agreed to lease the dome. And so we're actually leasing the dome, and we're making payments on that lease. And then the sports authority is technically paying the bond payment out of the money that we give them for the lease, right?
Yeah, I think let me kind of walk through it. There is a project financing, construction, and operating agreement that was executed on August 1st, 1991. It was signed by then OA Commissioner Jim Moody on behalf of the state. The RSA owns fee title to the dome, to the stadium. The RSA leased the dome to the state, county, and the city in consideration for the sponsor payments, which are the debt service payments over the term of the bonds. The then state, county, and city subleased the dome back to the RSA. The RSA entered into an operating agreement with the convention authority, and it is the convention authority that entered into the lease agreement with the Rams.
Okay, so now let me see if I can make sure I understand. The state leased the dome from the authority, and then somebody subleased it from the state.
That is set out in that agreement.
Okay, so who subleased it from the state? The city and the county subleased
it? No. It is the RSA leased the dome to the state, the county, and the city.
Okay.
Okay, under the agreement as entered, the city is obligated to make a $6 million payment annually. The county is obligated to make a $6 million payment annually. The state is obligated to make a $10 million payment plus a $2 million maintenance payment, so $12 million a year under the agreement. So the RSA leased the dome to the state, the county, and the city.
Right, and then who subleased it?
Those same entities back to the RSA.
Okay, so I got to ask this question. We're paying for this lease, $12 million a year, city and county each six.
Right.
What do we get for that payment?
That's the debt service obligation that we agreed under Chapter 67 to pay. I mean, if you look at 67, there's a Chapter 67. There's a level of instruments that we can use. It can be a finance agreement. It can be a lease. It can be a sublease. It's set out in that chapter, those arrangements.
But normally, most people, when they think about leasing something, right, you pay money, and then you get something back in the lease. The Constitution basically is pretty clear about, you know, anything over $1 million, we're supposed to have a vote of the people. Well, is this just kind of a mechanism to get around the Constitution on that?
No, it isn't. And that's where you and I are going to probably disagree. Because if you look at the opinion issued that you've got the document in front of you regarding revenue bonds, there's a Supreme Court precedent that looks at what a liability of the state is. And under basically what they, you know, it's been a while since I've read that opinion and read that case, but what they're getting to is that if you have the authority of the state to tax, it's a liability. They deem in that case that revenue bonds are not a liability of the state because they are subject to appropriation. Therefore, you don't have to have the vote of the people. You don't have to have, you know, the action that I think you're indicating we need to have under the RSA.
So when we lease the stadium
right
from the RSA,
right,
what do we get for that money? I mean, do we actually get to use the stadium?
Well, I think that certainly the state benefits from that. And Chapter 67 in setting up the RSA created an entity that could bond to build these instruments or these facilities, and they're various and they're numerous. And at that point in time, that there's a relationship between the RSA and the convention authority to operate that and hold, and as in this case, an NFL team to reside there and play football there. So the state is agreeing to pay, part of the bond debt service for the building of that stadium by the RSA.
Okay, so this leasing agreement, it actually is a written lease agreement that Jim Moody signed as the commissioner of OA in
That's
the past.
Correct.
And then the sublease agreement, do we get paid for that? We're subleasing it back. Do we get some money for that sublease?
I'd have to look at the exact language in that project. And again, it's a project financing, construction, and operation agreement.
Okay.
So that's what it's entitled. What it does is it says the RSA is going to issue the bonds, and then they are going to own fee title to the dome. But they're going to lease that to the state, the city, and the county for the payment, right? And then it's a sublease back to them so they can actually operate the facility. It is the payment of the debt service. It is a way to get to that process to pay the debt service off of the RSA obligation.
Okay, I understand. Now, my understanding is that in the terms of the debt financing agreement, the lease, that our only obligation is that the commissioner of OA will request the appropriation. And I believe that it says that it will request that the governor include the appropriation in his request to the General Assembly, right?
Well, I think what it says is that you've got language in Chapter 67 that addresses this, but you also got language in the operating agreement that deals with this. And generally what that gets to is that, yes, in OA is the Office of Budget. I can seek, in working with the budget director, to put an appropriation in, and that is the obligation of the state.
To seek an appropriation
from the General
Okay,
Assembly.
Okay, so now I want to focus in on that. Once you have done that, you have satisfied the terms of the lease, correct?
Yeah, that's our obligation under a revenue bond
is there
or
any other,
bond issuance.
Is there any other obligation other than to do that?
That's my responsibility to
do. So what you're telling me is that once you've done that, we have absolutely, totally met our obligation under the terms of the lease.
There may be consequences if that payment isn't made, right? That's a term of default under the lease. And there's actions pursuant to the statute.
Who would be defaulting?
Well, the state would be defaulting on its obligation. Okay, now the bondholders, now let me back up and explain to you again.
Wait a second.
No, let me finish here because this is important. The bondholders, when we send that instrument out to market, mm-hmm, we put it in the fact that it is not backed by the full faith and credit of the state, and it is subject to appropriation by the General Assembly. So the bondholders can't come against the state for payment when we don't pay. But there are consequences in the agreement, and I believe in the statute, that indicate that the commissioners appointed either by the city, the county, and the state, because that's set in statute. I think the city gets 3, the county gets 3, the state gets 5, can no longer participate as part of the RSA and cannot be behind or allow that entity to be behind the creation of another facility authorized to be built by the RSA in the future. So there are consequences. Now, I'll tell you, my responsibility is to seek the appropriation. If you don't make it, you don't make it. But we are in default.
Okay, but tell me what you mean by we are in default. Who are we defaulting?
We are defaulting under the terms of the agreement.
Who are we defaulting to? Not the bondholders, because
the bondholders can't pursue, but we would be in default. To say that we didn't make the payment and we're not in default is not something
so,
that I agree
so
with.
So my understanding is that we issue the bonds, and the bonds...
It's the RSA.
Well, the RSA issues the bonds, and we have this agreement, and the bonds basically say the bonds shall not constitute an indebtedness within the meaning of any constitutional or statutory debt limitation or restriction.
Right.
Basically, it's extremely clear in saying that they are not backed by the faith and credit of the state.
That's correct.
So what I'm trying to say is that if we don't make the payment, we may be in default with our agreement to the RSA, but we are not in default to the bondholders.
The bondholders have knowledge that when they buy those instruments, that it is subject to appropriation. And if the General Assembly decides not to appropriate, that portion of the payment is not going to be there. I signed the document to seek the appropriation. I honor that when I seek it, subject to appropriation. To think that some entity out in the world isn't going to view that as a level of default, I don't know.
Okay, so now, if under the terms of the agreement, you seek the appropriation, which means you just say, Governor, will you please include that into your appropriation request to the General Assembly?
I write it into his, yeah. I
right.
Sure.
Once you do that, under the terms of the agreement, we are satisfied.
We
are not in default as long as you do that.
We have sought the appropriation.
But my question is, would it affect our credit rating if we were to not make that appropriation?
Yeah, that's a. I don't know the answer to that.
Who knows the answer?
Well, the rating agencies, there's 3 of them. We talk to them all the time. They look at a number of different things. They constantly ask about debt. They constantly ask about revenue. They constantly ask about bills that pass a cut income tax. They constantly ask about management structure. They ask about reserves. They ask about pension obligations. And they do ask questions about newsworthy events.
For example, the newsworthy event of 5 senators saying that they're going to block any appropriations on these bonds.
They would probably have questions on that.
Okay, so have you had discussions with these rating agencies over recent news items?
I have not.
Okay, have you been involved in the planning of the bonding for the new stadium?
I have not been involved. Very, very limited involvement, and none recent within the last 9 to 12 months.
So as far as right now talking to us and to the world and the media, you cannot say for certain that if we did not make the payment on the Edward Jones Dome, that it would actually hurt or not hurt our credit rating.
I don't know.
Okay.
It could. It couldn't. I do read the media. I do listen to the news. Try to stay away from the blogs, but I do listen to that. And there's a lot of requirements, as I understand it, in this proposed deal that would have to fall into place before I think the RSA would act to try to move forward. And when they act, they will produce information to me and we will review it.
Okay. But, my next question is, what actions or what public statements made by legislators would rise to the level of having to inform potential bond buyers that they had occurred?
There's obligations in the finance agreement previously That indicates that the state will seek the appropriation and certain levels of the commitment to do that. We also have responsibilities when we do a bond issuance that, you know, RSA will have their professionals. We, OA, myself, will have my lawyers and professionals look at this. There's a document called the disclosure statement that the SEC has cracked down on very extensively on municipal lendings over the last 5 years that would have to disclose. Now, whether it's an individual member, whether it's the appropriation chairs, whether it's the body separate, that be relevant. That's what we would talk with our disclosure counsel, and that's what we would make sure the disclosure. Look, I'm going to make sure the disclosure statement comports with what reality is.
Okay, well, so far, reality is we have five senators, the approps chair, the approps vice chair, no, budget right. chair, budget right. vice chair. We have a few other representatives who basically said we're going to do everything within our power to stop this right. appropriation if it includes money right. for a second St. Louis football stadium unless it's approved by the General Assembly or right. by the people.
Right. That's the Senate floor leader and the Senate appropriations.
Yeah, the Senate floor leader and the right. Senate appropriations chair also. So now my question to you is, knowing that and just assuming that that's a fact,
right.
will that be presented, will that be disclosed to potential bond buyers?
Yeah, let me back up.
Is it possible that they won't, that won't be disclosed, I guess would be the other way to ask it.
I'm going to tell you, I'm going to review it at the time when I get it, when it hits my desk. And those bonds are sold with the understanding they're subject to appropriation. If there's relevant information that needs to go into that disclosure statement, it's going to go in. If this is deemed to be relevant, it will go in.
Would you deem that to be relevant?
In my opinion, I'm going to look at it when I get it.
So you can't say?
Well, I don't know if an approach chair or floor leader is going to say I'm going to block the budget is sufficient. I'm not saying that it isn't. But if the House acts and the Senate acts or their approach chairs act, is that more relevant than a handful of legislators? I don't know. We're going to assess that at the time that I need to make that decision.
Okay, so then before I turn, ask others to ask questions, I wanted to focus in on, is it true then that you, as the director of OA, the commissioner of OA, would have to sign off on the financing agreement if
the RSA moves forward and passes a resolution to issue bonds? Yeah, I think that is within my power.
Are you doing that under the authority of Governor Nixon, or are you doing it under your own authority?
I believe it's under my own authority. Now, the way I practice is I answer to a boss.
Right, I understand.
And I work with that boss, but I do believe the OA commissioner has that authority.
But technically, it's you taking the action and not the governor.
It would be the OA commissioner taking the action.
Okay, that's kind of important to us.
I figured it was.
Representative Barnes has some questions, I know. So would you like to proceed? Please do. Yeah.
Thank you, Doug.
You're welcome.
Before I ask you questions,
you didn't cause this. You're not the one that started a corrupt process to avoid public oversight. So today's not really fair to you, and I'll say that in advance because you're the guy that's been sent out here. I have up here a copy of the agreement from 1991. Mm-hmm. Has Governor Nixon committed, first of all, the proposals, let me back up a second.
Sure.
The proposals we've seen contemplate additional state debt of approximately $135 million through new net bond proceeds, and I'm not sure exactly what that means because it hasn't been made entirely clear. Has Governor Nixon committed to directing you or to himself signing a new bond agreement?
No, like I said earlier, I've had very limited role in this new process. I read what I read in the paper. I think I've read consistent with your representation that 135 is 135. I've not been directed, nor have I seen any action or had any conversations with the RSA. If that time comes, I will review it and participate and determine whether or not it's legal, whether or not it's appropriate through the disclosure, appropriate through the market to move forward with the agreement.
So it sounds like the governor has given you the benefit of plausible deniability. I brought a prop today because, and I want to show it to you. Were you present at this press conference?
I was not present.
Okay. This took place in St. Louis. It was a picture in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. It's a picture of Governor Nixon standing behind the state seal, indicating his full support for a project, for this project, that at the time his two-person task force and the Regional Convention and Sports Complex Authority, which is its full name, it's a convention and sports complex authority, not just a sports authority, had set forth a plan publicly that involved state bond payments. Do you believe Governor Nixon would hold a press conference standing behind the state seal talking about such a plan with no intention of actually carrying out what he is publicly promising to do?
That's not what I said. You referenced $135 million of state obligations. That's what I've read in the media. But we both know that price tag that we've read in the media is a lot more than that. So there's a lot of private funding. There's a lot of NFL commitment that has to fall into place before the state bonds would come into play.
I wasn't meaning to put words in your mouth, because I believe your testimony was you basically have not had conversations with the governor or with the Regional Convention and Sports Complex Authority about the extension of bonds, correct?
That is correct.
The fact I'm pointing out, Commissioner, is that the governor stood behind a podium, told the public that he supported this plan, had the plan in his hand that called for the extension of state bond payments.
And what I'm saying is that time may come, and I may get that agreement, and I may work with the governor, and we may do just that. But that time has not come yet.
Commissioner,
I've not had the conversations.
I understand. It's a rhetorical question, and the answer is obvious. When the governor stands behind a podium with the state seal with a plan in hand that calls for $135 million or more in new state bond proceeds through an extension of debt, it is a fair assumption to say that the governor actually means.
I'm not disputing that.
When the governor says something, this governor says something, he means it, correct?
I've worked with the man for a long time, yes. And what I'm telling you, one of the things that has concerned me that I've been asked is there's been a lot of conversation about the state issuing bonds. Under this scenario, it's the RSA that issues the bonds. The General Assembly acted in 1989 and passed a statute that is an extremely broad statute. Let me finish for a minute, because I think it's relevant. I read Representative Flanagan's letter last night, and he references that the intent of that statute was to build the Edward Jones Dome. Well, we both know when it was built, it was the TWA Dome, right? And you point to me in Chapter 67 where there's any point of an Edward Jones Dome, one football stadium. There isn't. It's extremely broad authority your body has given the executive, and that's my point. And when you look at other statutes, like MOHIFA, you've limited their authority. You don't allow higher education institutions or the state to bond with MOHIFA unless the General Assembly approves. My opinion, I don't read that barrier or that language in Chapter 67. And if you have a different legal opinion, I'd like to hear it.
Well, it's interesting that you're so confident in the definition of adjacent, because after we filed a lawsuit in Cole County, all of a sudden the city filed a claim in city court up there arguing the adjacency issue and happened to misstate the law on adjacency in this state and got a judgment. Of course, when you get a judgment in something that's not arm's length litigation, maybe that judgment's not quite as valid as other judgments. So let's talk about the just two that stick out. The first is at the end of 67653.1, paragraph 1, subparagraph 1, says that it talks about the construction
stadium constructed by the authority shall be suitable for multiple purposes, designed and constructed to meet NFL franchise standards, and shall be located adjacent to an existing convention facility. Now, you'd agree with me that when a statute is passed, the word existing means existing at the time a statute is passed.
You read a portion of the statute, and you're right. The law should speak for itself, but it does say all types of sports and recreation, professional, amateur, commercial, or private, and it lists them out.
This is a location limitation. Do you know where that clause in the statute came from?
I do not.
Okay, well, I'll inform you. It was the bill was proposed in 1989. It passed out of the Senate. Press reports indicate that it ran into trouble in a House committee. There was testimony at a House committee a couple weeks later, and this is what the testimony, there was a document that was at the Secretary of State's office that is a municipal evidence that described what the act would be allowed to do. At this point, there was no limiting language on adjacency. And what this memo explained is that in St. Louis, the act would be used to finance the construction of an exhibition center adjacent to the Cervantes Convention Center. And that new complex would be the largest convention center on one level in the United States and would allow St. Louis to host both more and larger conventions and meetings than can be accommodated today. The facility, as an afterthought, could also be used for professional football games and major events.
Well, I'm not familiar.
And then suddenly, after that memo popped up in front of that committee, a new sentence was added. And the sentence said, must be adjacent to an existing convention facility.
But, Representative, you and I both know, as lawyers, that you can rely on, legislative background, legislative history. I'm not familiar with the lawsuit with the city. I'm not familiar with the ruling. But if you have a ruling that doesn't interpret it that way, I would stand behind that ruling before I stand behind a 25-year-old memo.
So when we add amendments in committee based on particular testimony that says this is what this is designed to do, that means nothing? That's your testimony here today?
No, my testimony today is you've referenced to me a lawsuit brought by the city that you called it, in essence, a kangaroo court opinion.
No, I didn't say it was a kangaroo court opinion. I said the parties didn't litigate it at arm's length. And when a judge doesn't have arm's length litigation in front of him.
That's a ruling, though, right? Can we agree that that's a ruling by a court, by a judge?
It is a ruling by a judge with two parties who were not engaged in arm's length litigation.
And was it appealed?
Well, you know what's really interesting about that, Commissioner, is that in our case in Cole County, the RSA argued that we shouldn't be bringing a lawsuit in Cole County. Instead, we should ask to intervene in the lawsuit in St. Louis City. And you know what they did in St. Louis City? A group of taxpayers in St. Louis asked to intervene, and the RSA said, Judge, these taxpayers have no right to intervene in this lawsuit. They can't be a party to this lawsuit. You know why they wanted that?
I do not.
Because the taxpayers might have been able to make an offer of proof or present evidence, a record, and then either make litigation on the merits there and win there or create a record for appeal. But instead, the nice way to do litigation when you want to wrap things up nice and tidy is to get somebody who wants the same result as you, don't argue the merits of the lawsuit, and get a judge, and then refuse to appeal. Let's talk about the second part.
Let me respond to that, please, because I think you and I both know there's different ways to make law, right? You can go to court and make law, or this body can pass law or amend laws.
This body made the law limiting the authority of the Regional Convention and Sports Complex Authority.
You know how to pass laws to limit it because you
we don't need to change it, Commissioner. We don't need to change it, Commissioner.
Right?
We don't need to.
But you have that authority. If you wanted to make it crystal clear, you have the authority to amend the law.
And then what would be interesting is when we do that to make it crystal clear, I'm sure the RCSCA and your boss would come into court and say, look, Judge, look, they're trying to change the statute. They know it means something other than it means. We don't need to change the statute.
Fine.
You said there's no other limitation. So let's look at 67.653.1, paragraph 10, subparagraph G. This is a refunding bonds. Can't do a refunding bond in an amount that causes the principal or interest to increase. You agree with that's what it says?
I think you could do a new bond issuance. I think you could do a new bond issuance.
So is it your testimony here today that the governor, that the plan for a new bond issuance would be to keep the two debts separate?
I don't know. That's my call, right? And I've not seen the agreement of what the RSA is going to put before us because they haven't acted on it. They've got to pass a resolution. That is certainly one of the things that we would look at, Representative, when that hits my desk.
This
here are the list of things the commissioner said that we would have to go through in order to issue the bonds. Okay. Do you mind if I pick up for a second?
Sure.
Okay, I'm just going to give him an opportunity to look at the information you provided us.
Okay.
So in order for us to issue these bonds, you've provided the thing under the revenue.
Right.
And then under the conduit bonds.
Again, you keep saying we. Under conduit bonds, it's the entity.
Okay, it's the entity.
That issues.
I understand that, right. Okay, so under that, there would have to be a vote of the issuing entity's board. That would be the Convention and Sports Authority.
Correct.
Have they done that yet?
Not to my knowledge.
Whether
no.
to pursue a bond sale for the requested project. So,
not
so
that
they
I'm
will.
Aware of.
That would be the first step. They will have to do that. And then it says they would have to structure a finance agreement or lease as a revenue stream for the payment of the bonds. And at that point, will they enter into discussions with you about how to do that?
That's generally the way it works, yes.
Okay. And so have you formed an opinion yet about how that you would
proceed? I have not, because I've not seen anything in regard to it.
But you have formed an opinion that you are authorized under the statute to proceed.
Correct.
Okay. Then there would be the inclusion of the debt service in the budget. So
correct.
You would have to ask the governor to include that in the budget.
That's correct.
And then it says at that point, then, there would be engagement of bond counsel, disclosure counsel, financial
right.
advisor.
All of these are unique issues.
And are these, these are sequential?
No, they're not. They can move around. What I'm trying to do is I'm trying to list for you the steps that I look at and take care of in regard to any conduit issuance. It can come in varying orders, and it has.
Okay, I wanted to make sure on that.
Sure.
Okay, so the finance agreement is going to be all tidied up and signed and put together before you go and ask for the inclusion in the budget?
Yeah, because when that comes to us, we're going to know from the RSA how much they want to issue, what they want to issue for, and we're going to look. We're going to look at the status at the time that we receive the agreement. We're going to do our due diligence. We're going to engage our professional experts. We're going to decide what needs to go into the disclosure agreements and documents. We got a lot of work to do before we tidy up and finalize any finance agreement.
Okay, now, right now, we're making the $12 million payment on the Edward Jones Dome, which used to be the TWA Dome.
Correct.
Okay. And we still have to pay on that for 6 or 7 years.
Yeah, I think, I want to say 22 for the 10.
21, I think.
21, and then $2 million goes a couple more years out.
Right. Okay, so this new agreement, I agree with Representative Barnes that the language of the statute says 50 years. You can't go beyond 50 years. So part of it would have to be a new bond issuance.
That's certainly something we would look at.
Okay. So if it's a new bond thing, wouldn't it have to have more than $12 million a year appropriation, since that's...
That's something we would look at.
So it
know.
Is possible. It is within the realm of possibility that you might come to us and say, okay, we're going to continue to ask for the $12 million. Now we're going to also ask for this other money over here.
It's within the realm of possibility that I wouldn't, too.
Right.
Right.
It is within the realm of possibility that you would, that you wouldn't.
Right.
Is there any possibility that they would go ahead and build the stadium and then not come to us for any new appropriation other than the Edward Jones Dome appropriation, and go ahead and build the stadium and not come to us for like 2 or 3 years?
I guess anything is possible.
Do you foresee that as a reasonable possibility?
Yeah, I hate to even speculate on that because I don't know.
Okay. Okay. So Do you believe that you would be authorized to come to us and say, we have now entered into this financing agreement and we're going to request additional money for the financing of this stadium, and we're still going to also ask you for the $12 million for the Edward Jones Dome? That is possible.
There's a lot of possibilities. If it's a new bond issuance, we could do that.
You could do that. Now, if you did...
It's subject to your authority to appropriate.
Right. And but do you believe... You've already said you have no idea. We are fearful that if we didn't appropriate, somebody would then say, oh, you're damaging the state's credit rating. See, you understand our feeling here is that we're going into debt. According to the Sports Authority now, it's $149 million that they...
Okay.
We gave you that document.
I'll look at it.
Basically $150 million plus another $50 in tax credits, and then there's brownfield tax credits on top of that.
Right.
There's a whole lot of state money here. Maybe a couple $100 million or more.
Right.
I mean, don't you think that at some point in advance of doing this, the legislature ought to be involved asked?
I think you have been by passing Chapter 67. Representative, I disagree as to what that means.
Well, and I disagree too.
Well, we do. But again,
the governor disagrees about what Chapter 67 means. Well, he did in 1991. If you look at his vote history and what he did on the Senate floor in 1991.
But now that he's the dictator, it's a little bit different.
You believe that if you came to us and asked us for that, do you think that we would have any obligation to go ahead and appropriate that money?
That's the power of the General Assembly. You could not appropriate.
But you
either appropriate or you don't.
But you don't think you think it might, and it might not hurt our credit rating. You just have no idea.
I have no idea.
Okay. You want
to? I want to make sure I understand what we're hearing here. That this process is 15 months old. The two-man task force started before Governor Nixon in June or July of last year, correct?
That's what I've read in the media, yeah.
Okay. Governor Nixon appointed his two-person task force in late November of 2014, correct?
Okay. I assume I take you at your word.
The two-person task force comes up with a plan that calls for state bonds, correct?
It's not state bonds. It's RSA bonds.
Okay. It calls for RSA bonds in which the state is a sponsor of at least $135 million of.
The state would participate. How that would break out, I don't know because I've not seen the documents that would suggest that.
The state would be a large sponsor.
It has been in the past.
The state would be a large sponsor under their plan.
Again, Representative, I don't have
Have you seen any plan that talks about bonds less than $100 million. Is $100 million a large amount of money?
I've not seen any documents put in front of me from the RSA that demonstrates how much bonds they would issue.
Is $100 million a lot of money?
$100 million is a lot of money.
Okay. You just said you have not seen anything from the RSA put in front of you about this plan, correct?
I have not seen any document about them moving forward with a bond issuance that would trigger my responsibility on behalf of the state to review the process, make sure it's legal, make sure
items
are disclosed.
How long will your process take?
I don't, it can take, generally when we go through the Board of Public Buildings, there's three hearings. Those take time. You got to work with your disclosure counsel and your bond counsel. You got to market the bonds. So, if I was ballparking, 4 to 6 months through the process, my review, it could be done in 2 weeks. It could be done in 2 months.
Could be done in 2 weeks.
Could be. This is going to be a lot more complicated, I have the impression. So my guess is it's going to take a lot longer.
So.
But again, the RSA has to act, okay? They come forward and say, this is what we're going to do. We're going to look at it. I think under 67, I've got the authority, if I wanted to enter into that finance agreement.
So the governor has appointed a task force.
Right.
The Regional Convention and Sports Complex Authority has indicated their plan and released information about over $100 million
That's my understanding.
Result of the state being a sponsor.
That would be a component. you know, we are about a 1/8 component.
15 months into the project.
Right.
And you have not had any, you, the person who has to sign the project financing agreement, have not had any conversation with the governor about it?
I have not had conversations with the governor.
Hold on. You have not had any conversation with the Regional Convention and Sports Complex Authority?
Not that I'm aware of.
You have not had any conversations with the governor's two-person task force, which kind of bleeds over into the regional?
No, I have not.
Is this typically the way in which state government operates, where there's a plan to spend more than $100 million in state tax proceeds, and the person who actually has to do it, who serves at the pleasure of the governor, is not brought in 15 months into the process?
I can tell you in my experience that when I get the document, I will do what I'm obligated to do on behalf of the citizens of the state and under the statutes. Now, how that's set up and how that's decided, that's not within my bailiway.
Commissioner, I also want to be fair. I believe when you say you haven't been brought in, I think it's the man who would be dictator's plan to keep you out of the loop, because he might know that you'd be in front of a committee and ask these questions, and you're an honest guy, and I believe you'd give honest answers.
Jay, may I interrupt? Commissioner, do you have to leave any time real quick to get to your meeting at 1?
Let's finish, and I will make sure my staff contacts Missouri Consolidated, and they can move all those important decisions.
Okay, I just, out of respect to you, I know.
No, that's fine. I appreciate that. No, but let's,
Okay. So I don't want to insinuate by my line of questions that I think you're saying anything dishonest today, because I believe you're giving honest answers to all of these questions. I disagree with your legal conclusions.
We do disagree.
But as far as the facts of what you've been made aware of, I believe it.
Okay.
Who does OA have as bond counsel? Is it the same firm all the time, or is it?
We generally contract out and bid those out. And right now it's Gilmore and Bell as bond counsel. It's Cutat Rock as disclosure counsel. And then we use Columbia Capital for general finance market information.
Okay. And are those, do you do a global bid, or is it project specific?
We get them on contract, and then we use them for those projects that come within that time period.
Okay, so it's global. So it's like a
5-year,
1-year period, and basically they're going to do all the bonds that you're involved.
When we refinance, they get it. Yes.
Okay. This reminds me a little bit of MAMTEC. Okay, and I want to be clear to Gilmore Bell, Cutat Rock, and anyone else involved in the potential issuance of bonds. They are buying a lawsuit. MAMTEC ended up in litigation against Armstrong Teasdale, against I think some other underwriters. This will result in litigation, because the General Assembly is not going to pay a dime for a new stadium. Which also, it has me thinking about time frame. With your 4 to 6 month time frame, would you be willing to waive sovereign or official immunity in your role in signing bonds for a new stadium?
You're a lawyer, and you know the answer.
The answer is no.
That's correct.
And the governor himself would not be willing to waive such immunity.
I can't speak for the governor.
And so I think a step the legislature might need to take is to modify the law so that any state employee and the governor, if a contract for bonds, for new bonds for a new football stadium is signed, are no longer protected by sovereign or official immunity.
You're marching right down the path of not wanting anyone to work for state government. So,
Commissioner,
if that's your answer to this, then you have to do what you got to do.
Commissioner, this is a special situation. We have a governor who knows the General Assembly does not support what he is doing, who insists on marching straight down the path of, this microphone is really good at cutting me off, of 30 years of new debt. My grandchildren, they won't have a job by that point, could still be paying this debt. And if the governor continues down this path, he will give the legislature no choice, because there are could be consequences for his action. And I think there need to be personal consequences if the governor marches down a path to bind taxpayers with this much debt without the approval of the General Assembly or the public.
I have a follow-up question.
Sure.
So do you believe that 20 years from now, the St. Louis Sports Authority could go ahead and build a third football stadium?
Or a fourth or a fifth.
Fourth.
And this body that I'm talking to members of can change that if they are so inclined to do that.
Let me ask, you may not want to answer this. Do you really believe that it was the intent of the legislature to make it so that they could build a fourth or a fifth?
I look at the words of the statutes as written, and I don't guess as to what it is or isn't. You could have put one in there. You could have specified things. You didn't do it. You can amend it.
Well,
now
I mean, it's not like
to.
Me didn't do it. I mean, I've only been here since 2003.
I mean, we
but,
could.
But
we could,
do you really seriously?
Your body did. Your body passed the law.
And
this body can amend that law.
Okay, so then, so the body passed the law, but you don't want to opine on whether or not you think that they really meant to do that?
Well, it's kind of like, do I want to opine on whether or not I have authority to buy another airplane?
Okay.
Right? I mean, I look at the law, I look at what's drafted, I look at the budget, and I make a determination.
Okay.
Now, we may disagree whether or not that's good practice, but looking at the words in the statute, I believe we have the authority.
Okay. Well, that's subject to debate, and
right.
We're debating that in court, so we don't need to debate it here. But
fair enough.
But I don't really have any other questions myself, because you answered all the questions that I personally had about the process and so on. But since this is a give and take, I want to give now. My advice to you is to disclose to potential bond buyers that the General Assembly has enough legislators have vowed not to appropriate this money that they can be certain that there will be no appropriation.
Rest assured that we're watching that.
And you will look into that, but you haven't.
Yeah,
I know you said
that will certainly be part of, you know, our analysis and you know, discussion over the disclosure.
I also want to say this to you, that if it should come to pass that the bonds are issued, that it is included in a budget that comes before the Senate, then as I start my filibuster, my first words are going to be, bondholders, I know a good attorney, and I would advise you to talk to that attorney.
Well, again, I'll point you back to Chapter 67, and I'll point you back to the 1991 agreement.
It
is crystal clear that when they buy these instruments, they know it is subject to the appropriation of your bodies.
But they have to have it disclosed to them, and if it is not disclosed to them, then we're not going
to
appropriate it.
It's got to be on the face of any bonds we issue. So not only in the disclosure agreement, but the bonds themselves have to say subject to appropriation.
Right.
And if they read the media like I have over the last 3 weeks, 4 weeks, they're gonna have to weigh whether or not they want to invest and buy those instruments.
Do you believe that the intention of putting that into the statute in multiple places, in putting it onto the bond agreement and putting it into the financing agreement,
buyer beware,
all of those places, do you believe that the intention was to let everybody know that if we didn't appropriate the money that it would not hurt our credit rating?
I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is they can't come against the state.
Oh,
the
I know they
can't.
Full
faith and credit, or require the state to tax. Like if you didn't make the payment on the fourth class building bonds, those holders of those bonds could sue the state and they would win.
Well, see, here's what we're trying to do. We're trying to stop this project as the way it's being carried out. My advice would be for you to tell the governor, stop, step back, come to us with your proposal, make your case, and if found worthy, we will give you that authority. But if he doesn't do that, our intention is to stop this project.
Okay.
And the project, as you have stated, has not even been put before you, the OA commissioner.
That segment of my responsibility has not been put forth in
before
front of
you.
Me. Right.
So we are so early in the process that we feel like making the statement that we're not going to pay on these bonds should be enough to tell the administration and you not to do this. And I hope you will carry that message to the governor. Next question is, if you were to disclose to the bondholders that so many legislators have said they're not going to allow this, would that increase the rate of return that they would have to pay on these bonds?
I don't know. It could. I don't know the answer to that.
Do you have any experience with similar situations where you disclose things like what we're saying and
I have not. I can tell you we went to market on BPB and we sold bonds on Tuesday. We were concerned about the fluctuations in the market. Our experts said we'd get around 3%. We sold those bonds at 2.51%.
Well, so you need to pay like 1,000,000% because we're not going to pay on them. But anyway, I'm going to turn it back over to the
Commissioner. I just have a few more questions.
Sure.
Who sells the bonds? Is that by contract? Is that by? I assume you've got to contract that out as well.
We do. Generally, in these conduit situations, we work with the entity and work with them, and then they're sold.
Okay. Do you know who? Do you know who sold the so long ago? Who sold the original bonds? I'm not sure. I don't think it's relevant. Well, Commissioner, I want to thank you. You are always game to take the arrows. In this case, I think you're defending the indefensible, and you have a job to do. And you come up here and you do it well. So. This is not about you.
Thank you.
Did you have anything you'd like to say before?
I'm good.
Okay, are you good? All right, Representative Vescovo, did you?
I'm good.
Are you good, Jay?
Okay. Yes, Mr. Chairman.
We're good.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I really appreciate your coming.
You bet. Thank you.
Okay, so like I said before, we'd already invited the Convention and Sports Authority to come, but they declined mainly because I guess three of us here are plaintiffs in the lawsuit. They didn't want to come in while that lawsuit was pending. So they're not going to be able to have an opportunity. But I did want to point out to the media that they did answer some questions. And one of the things that they said, and I don't know if you got to see this, so far it says under the open record contracts, they've spent $7.45 million already in the effort to construct this new stadium. And then they go on to say that that does not include payments under contracts that are closed under the Sunshine Law. And that would, in particular, payments relating to the purchase of specific parcels of real estate. So we don't know. Maybe they've bought chunks of land already. We're not allowed to know that.
Senator, I would note I'm on the committee that hears House Bill 5 first. The governor puts $7.45 million into House Bill 5 to pay for these amounts, or if he puts any amount into House Bill 5 to pay for these amounts, it will be, I will offer an amendment to take it out of House Bill 5. Actually, I don't think I'll need to get there because the budget chairman will file the House Bill 5 or I think it'd be 2005 because we're in the second year, and it's not going to be in the budget appropriation. So Regional Convention and Sports Complex Authority is on notice that money is not going in the budget.
Well, they've already spent this money out of money that they have received already.
And, Senator, we're having a conversation with ourselves. They were quoted in the Post-Dispatch is doing a great job reporting on things in this incident. That they expected reimbursement from the state at some point. Senator Sylvie immediately responded and said that's not happening. I think Senator Schaefer might have said the same thing. And
it's not happening from my point of view either. The other thing is that so far, the other information that they gave us is that they expect NFL team ownership to put up $250 million. The NFL G4 program to put up $200 million for a total of $450 million. And then state-supported bonds to be $149.9 million. New city-supported bonds, $69.7 million. City amusement tax bonds, $66 billion. Since this is a public forum, we're going to invite anybody who wants to come in and speak to us. Is there anyone who would like to come and present? Sir, please come up. Yeah, why don't you come up and just tell us who you are and where you're from, and then just what you'd like us to know.
I'm Larry Eves from Melville, St. Louis, South County. Thank you for giving me a few minutes to talk about funding for another stadium, not just a new stadium, but another new stadium. On Sunday, September 13th, the Seattle Seahawks will be in St. Louis playing against the Inglewood Rams. Their starting quarterback, Russell Wilson, the rest of the players, coaches, and staff will pay taxes while here. However, the NFL does not pay taxes, and since 1940 and revised in 1966, they have had a 501c6 tax-exempt status. The NFL recently has announced they will give up their tax-exempt status, but it's mostly symbolic for public relations. And on a related note, the National Hockey League and Professional Golfers Association also do not pay taxes. Only Major League Baseball gave up their tax-exempt status in 2007. Part of the 501c6 states for the NFL, professional football leagues which are not organized for profit. Let me repeat that, not organized for profit. Commercials for last year's Super Bowl cost $4.4 million for 30 seconds, and yes, that payment is to the television networks, but these networks, NBC, CBS, and Fox, have contracts to broadcast games through 2022 for an estimated worth of $3 billion a year given to the NFL. Talk about not organized for profit. Then there's the build it and they will come slogan. Cities and states go to great lengths to lure a new team or to keep the home team home. Cities and states feel compelled to compete with other cities that offer new or updated facilities. Otherwise, the home team might make good on its threat to leave. The weight of economic evidence, however, shows that taxpayers spend a lot of money and ultimately don't get much back. And when this paltry return is compared with other potential uses of the funds, the investment almost always seems unwise. Still, cities and states eagerly propose spending the funds, and taxpayers too often willingly support the proposals until now. I am only one of a mad as hell, and I'm not taking it anymore. I suggest the state of Missouri and the cities of Kansas City and St. Louis collect from the NFL league offices for past taxes while they play games in both cities, as they are no longer tax exempt. And speaking of Kansas City, the Chiefs are still playing in a stadium that was built in 1972. There are many in here that weren't even born in 1972. And while these new taxes will not take care of the total cost of another new stadium, it would help you and I pay fewer taxes in the states to come. My retirement is not for his stadium. Thank you.
Do you have any questions? No. Thank you so much for coming.
Appreciate your time.
That's a long way from Melville. Would anyone else like
to? Hold on. I have a question. Yeah. This might be a personal question. Let's just ask theoretically. I assume you own your own home, some fashion.
Yes, sir.
Let's just assume you've got like 8 years left on the mortgage. Would you take out a brand new note on a stadium that was on a home that was twice as expensive and not have any plan for the old one?
No, sir.
You wouldn't do that in your personal finances?
No, sir.
Oh, okay. I was just wondering. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Anyone else?
Mr. Chairman, good to see you. Representative. Carl Bearden, I'm the executive director of United for Missouri. We have 77,000 members statewide. Majority of whom oppose public funding of a stadium. They don't oppose the new stadium. They just oppose how Governor Nixon intends to take more money out of their pockets to pay for it. You know, one of the things, and you've run across it, I know, in all of your issues, is there are a bunch of stories or things being stated about this agreement or the stadium that simply aren't true. And I've provided to the chairman, I think it's in your packets, a printout of some of what I call myths and half-truths, and we have this up on our website at unitedformissouri.org. And if you wouldn't mind, I'll just go over them. I'm not going to read them to you, obviously, because you have them. But just to hit them, you know, one of the biggest things that we hear is the economic development potential brought about by building a new stadium. Obviously, the jobs created through the building of the stadium, which, quite frankly, are Depression-era type jobs because they're public jobs. They're essentially government welfare-provided jobs because the government's paying for the most of what's happening. But we do know that the research exists. It's clear. It's really indisputable, even though people argue with it, that with more than 20 years of academic research, they cannot find any evidence that there is any economic development brought about by the building of new stadiums, mainly because of all the giveaways that occur under these deals, such as we're seeing here. I've provided you some links to that. I've provided you the Wall Street Journal write-up about it that was recently out. But, you know, most of the studies show that you don't see any income growth, you don't see any tax growth out of it, and you don't get any long-term employment growth just simply because they are primarily underwriting and giveaways. So that myth, idea of bringing jobs and economic and income growth is simply a myth, and it's demonstrably so. The next thing that a lot of us hear is that if the NFL leaves St. Louis, that St. Louis will dry up and go away. Now, St. Louis has a lot of problems already, which they need to address, so which the NFL team there is not contributing positively or negatively to. And if they leave, they will leave St. Louis pretty much untouched. An economics professor at Olin School of Business in WashU very pointedly pointed out that losing the Rams would be a blow to St. Louis's pride, not its economy. And so quite honestly, and I would agree that it would be bad news to lose an NFL franchise. We've actually seen that happen before when the Cardinals left. But economically, it's not the impact that people think it is. And I know that Representative Barnes had a hearing earlier, I believe, this past session, where some of those numbers were discussed. And we'll probably talk about those here in a little bit. But there is a whole litany of studies, of information. I provided a bunch of links to you and who did the studies in your packets about how there is a lot more romance to building a new stadium or having an NFL team in your city or your state than there is actual love. Don't confuse romance with love. All of those, that information is provided to you at your leisure. You can look through those. Another myth that Representative Barnes, I think, had hit in his committee earlier this year is that the Rams' salaries and the visiting team salaries are more than enough to pay for whatever the bonds are. And the fact of the matter is, as you're probably aware, we have a statute in Missouri that captures all non-resident income taxes, which the majority of Rams players, coaches, and staff, as well as the visiting players, are, that goes into a very specific fund. And it's for arts, entertainment, and professional sports, and so entertainment fund. And so what we do know is that the Rams were projected to have collected between $7.8 and $9.2 million would be lost if the Rams were to leave. Now, let me also quickly point out, this issue really isn't about the Rams. It doesn't matter whether the Rams won the Super Bowl last year, which we know they didn't, or whether they've been had a losing record for the past few years, which they have. That's really immaterial to the argument. The argument is about why are we building a new stadium and who's paying for it? You know, again, new stadium's fine. Don't make the public pay for it. But so what we're talking about is $7.8 to $9.2 million that would be collectively lost. And Representative Barnes was given a bunch of information. There's been information throughout the press that in 2014, for example, Michelle Kleba, who was a director of communications at Department of Revenue, pointed out that the state had received approximately $18.4 million from NFLs. Now, they do not know because they're not allowed to track, you know, how much you pay. So they don't know who all contributed. So they basically take all, they do know it's NFL revenue, and they just divide it in half for the Chiefs and half for the Rams. And what they came out with was that in fiscal year 2014, there was about $17.8 million collected from football. Half of that would be about $9.2 million or eight point something million. But the interesting thing is that in fiscal year 2012, it was $21.6 million. 2013 was $18.5 million, and in 2014, it's $17.8 million. So they seem to be declining. So what we do know is that it goes into this fund. It goes into, worthwhile programs, since I'm not the budget chair anymore to talk about it. But the fact of the matter is, though, it does not pay for schools. It does not pay for roads. None of this revenue from income tax salaries of non-resident players, whether they be Rams or whether they be visiting teams, goes to help pay any of the state's essential services bills. They go to nice-to-haves, but they don't go to those essential bills. And again, 143, 183.1 specifically talks about that. And there is a game that is played all across the country. You know, you've seen LeBron go from place to place. He got out of Cleveland, went to Florida, where there was no income tax, and so on and so forth. So all those games are played. I've given you a reference to talk about that as well. The other thing is, well, the Rams pay enough rent to cover the payment. And this is what I think most people are surprised about. Are you aware how much the Rams pay per year? $250,000 in rent for the year. They do pay an extra $250,000 per year for game day expenses. So they pay a total of $500,000 for the use of the dome, not to mention all the things that they rake in when they sell things and so on and so forth. So that's compared to the $12 million we've talked about with the state, with $10 million toward the bonds and $2 million toward maintenance, and six each from the city and the county under the current arrangement. So with or without the Rams, the Edward Jones Dome, the maintenance fund, is going broke. You guys are going to have to deal with this in the future, and adding a new stadium is only going to exacerbate that. But surely, what you hear, surely all that money you collect from these naming rights takes care of wiping out anything for the bonds. And the good news is that I believe it was 2012 was the last time that the naming rights were renewed on the Edward Jones Dome, and they were renewed for about $42.3 million for the next 11 years. That's pretty good, right? The bad news is the state and the RCSA get very little to none of that under the agreement. It all went to the Rams. And so, and that's the way most of them go. And one of the things that you don't hear talked about in this new structure is what's going to happen with the naming rights. It seems to be an elusive and unanswered question under the new deal. The other question and the point that you'll hear is that downtown St. Louis needs to be cleaned up. The area where the stadium's going to go is in very poor shape and derelict and so on and so forth. And to a degree, that's very true. However, what I do find interesting is that many of the buildings, or some of the buildings, that lie within this redevelopment area have already had millions of dollars of tax credits recently spent on them to refurbish them. There's a low-income housing deal in one of the buildings. I mean, so a lot of these buildings have already had tax credits. So now you're going to give tax credits to tear down tax credit buildings you've already paid to have refurbished. So not quite very efficient and economical, I don't think, in that use. And so there are a lot of things along that side. If you're interested, I give you a video that the Show Me Institute actually did that really captures that pretty well if you're interested in watching that. The other issue that people want to say is, well, you know, Kroenke is getting public assistance to build his Inglewood Stadium. And if you really look up what the Inglewood Stadium deal is, he's asking for no money, no upfront money from the stadium. So that's a half-truth, because what really happens is there's no upfront money from government, any level of government, that he's asked for. What is going to happen is that there's going to be a number of public improvements, sidewalks, sewers, roads, et cetera. And then the deal that he is making them is that once they are completed and once the stadium starts generating $25 million a year to Inglewood, the city, then they start reimbursing for the public improvements and the public improvements only. So that's the only exchange of public funds in the agreement in Inglewood. And you know, if they generate $24,999,999 one year, they don't have to make a payment, because it has to be $25 million. So that's a falsehood that people are promoting about that. You know, the Arrowhead was mentioned by Mr. Reeves earlier. You know, when Arrowhead was originally built, it was not built with state bonds. It was built by a number of tax credits and local funding and so forth. When it was recently renovated, it was not renovated by state taxpayer-funded bonds. Tax credits again, and the people of Jackson County voted to subject themselves to an additional sales tax to pay for the renovations. They didn't come to ask the rest of the state to pay for the Kauffman Stadium, Arrowhead and Kauffman upgrades. And that was about $400 million. I've given you a lot of references about that that you can go out and check that out as well. My favorite thing in all of this, though, is when you hear Governor Nixon and many of the proponents of the new stadium is that there will be no new taxes. You know, the new stadium will be built with existing taxes and just extending the bonds. And fundamentally and on the surface, that's true, but it's very deceptive. Because as Senator Schaaf pointed out and with the conversation with Commissioner Nelson, is that our payments, state payments and the city's payments and the county's payments, are due to expire in about 2021. That's within the obligation that we as a state agreed to pay. That's when it ends. Any payments made after that on a new stadium is additional requirements, is an additional burden on taxpayers that do not exist today and that they would not have to pay today. So when somebody says no new taxes, they are doing it with a smile on their face, knowing that it's not exactly true because they do know it's going to cost us $360 million, $480 million, or what have you, over the next 30 to 40 years with additional payments on new bonds. And so I find that to be very disingenuous and very frustrating. So, the accurate reporting is that people are concerned. They oppose us. You know, we know that there have been number of polls done. We know that a poll was done around the first of the year. 70% of the likely voters in the St. Louis region oppose public funding of a new stadium. It's about the same statewide, but there was a poll done recently within the last week that shows 72% of the people statewide of likely voters believe that if there's a new stadium to be built before those bonds are issued, it ought to be put to a public vote. Those are real numbers. Those are real people. Those are not gerrymandered. Those are not, let me call all the Rams fans, because that's what the NFL did. They sent out all the Rams fans and season ticket holders questionnaires about whether they want a new stadium or not, and you can guess what the answer is there. But when you talk to the real people in Missouri, they want to vote, and most of them are opposed to public funding of a new stadium. So it's pretty clear. I think the position taken by the legislature is we're elected to represent the people on issues like this. You are not allowing us to do that by the provisions that you are taking, and that is exactly right. I think you're
usurpation.
Yes, it is, because Governor Nixon is purposely bypassing the people's elected representatives to do something he wants to do that the people themselves don't want. And so I encourage you to and applaud your efforts and encourage you to continue to be the watchdogs for the people.
Well, it's obvious, Carl, that you've done quite a bit of analysis of the stadium, the deal that's proposed, and we appreciate your coming. I have a question.
Sure.
You know, have you looked at the economic analysis that they put forward saying that it's going to, you know, generate jobs, revenue to the state and so on?
Well, Senator, you are, I'll say this delicately, probably old enough to remember some Elvis Presley movies. And in one of those movies, it happened in Fort Lauderdale, and there's a song about the Fort Lauderdale Chamber of Commerce, how the sun shines 365 days a year, and so on and so on and so forth. And it does. You just don't always see it because of clouds. And those economic numbers are much the same. I mean, the facts and many of the economics numbers that are in here dispel that and kind of break it down because those are gross numbers. I've seen the pay, for example, the income tax will be $20 million or what have you. And the fact of the matter, it doesn't go to pay for the bonds.
But the thing is that when they say that it will generate $20 million in income tax,
right,
that money comes from ticket sales and concession sales and so on, correct?
Right.
And isn't it true that if a fan didn't spend the money on the ticket or on the concession, that they probably would spend that money elsewhere in the economy?
Yeah, most of the funds that you choose to spend, you choose to spend on either a football ticket or you go to a movie. Most people, as a routine, they make their choice on where to spend their entertainment
dollar. So when they do this economic analysis, do they take into account the decrease in other revenue?
No. No.
They don't.
No.
And this, to me, is the biggest fallacy of their projection. They don't take into account the decrease revenue that you get if people spend their money elsewhere.
Yeah,
because they're not going to be spending it elsewhere. They're going to be buying football tickets and so on. And
Anyway, yeah. Do either of you have any questions? Joe, if you're still on the phone, do you have any questions?
I'm good.
Okay.
All right.
Any questions?
Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else would like to address the group here?
Reed Forster, Chief of Staff for Lieutenant Governor Kinder. I just, for the record, wanted to say we did provide you with a letter. I know it's not commonplace in a hearing to read a letter into the record, so just wanted to make sure you were available to that, or that was available to you. If you need a copy of that, yes. We certainly provide that.
We have taken Lieutenant Governor Kinder's letter, we've distributed it, and it's been given to the media. Right. And we appreciate it, and thank you. Be sure to thank the Lieutenant Governor for doing that. Okay, any other person wishing to address our committee? Seeing none, I guess we're adjourned. Thank you.